You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
You know what my Lexus won't do? It won't start smoking meth and break into your house in 10 years and steal your goddamn PlayStation 2, motherfucker. All it's going to do is be gas efficient and have a good resale value.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from D's World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, private detective and author James Lynch. And now your host. His biggest takeaway from the whole Trump shooting was that the word assassination has way more S's in it than he ever realized. Dees Casillas!
Malib Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. Thank you for coming around, hanging out for another episode. We have a fun guest on today. James Lynch, he is an author. He is a private detective, a gumshoe, a dick, a PI, other synonyms for that. He's been involved with more divorces than Liza Minnelli. This guy knows what he's doing. He's a good. We're going to talk to him in just a second. It's going to be great. Before we get into that, as usual, guys, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live dates coming up soon. If you're listening to this as it comes out on Wednesday, which I know you all do, you clamor for the new episodes, even though I missed last week or two, sorry. I'll be at Tanks in San Antonio tomorrow. That's Thursday the 18th. Come check it out. We're doing a show there. And then getting some reps in before I hit the road in August and September on tour, doing some dates around Northwest and all over. So go to the website, check it out, see what's going on, guys. But enough of that. I'm here to talk to you, my gentle snowflakes, my listeners, you people who are so kind and listen. And I have a couple things I want to talk about. First of all, I've gone back and I've been perusing some old content. I'm getting wistful. I'm in my wistful stage, probably because I'm dying, I assume. I don't know. That's what happens before you die. You get wistful, right? So I'm looking back wistfully on my life and what I remember that's not in a drug-fueled haze. And, you know, I've been listening to some old episodes of the show. I've had some, doing a show with Sophie and Jeremy recently, kind of like the old show. I've been watching some old of my Social Minute, the comedy news show I was doing during the pandemic. And my God, I used to be a lot funnier, it turns out. I don't know what happened. The pandemic really, really beat me down. Once it was over, I just was done being funny, apparently. No, it's not true. But I definitely think that there was a shift in the show when we went to the one-on-one content. And it's been good. It's been fun. We're going to keep doing it. But I feel like I need to put an emphasis on comedy in the show again. So that's my job as the host, my job as the content creator for the show. So I'm going to start injecting a little more comedy into this podcast through the interviews, through the direction of the show, through the way the format is set up. We're just going to make small tweaks and hopefully everyone will just get a little more laughs, but still get the information and still, everything and all that. So with that, we're going to start a brand new segment. It's called Jokes I Wrote This Week. It's exactly what it sounds like. They are jokes that I wrote this week. Now, these aren't stage jokes that I'm taking to the comedy club on tour quite yet. They're just tidbits that came out of my dumb brain and I put on Facebook because that's the only app that I actively use a lot because that's the age demographic I'm in. I can't do TikTok. I barely do Instagram. I don't know how to use Twitter. I mean, I know how to use it, but I just don't know how to, like, I don't know how to find anything on there. Anyway, so here it is. I'm going to read you some jokes. They're basically just one-liners that I wrote this week. Costco announced today they plan to build an 800-unit apartment complex in a bid to ease the housing crisis in L.A. The downside is you have to rent 40 apartments at a time. All right, that's not bad. Might turn that into something. It's pretty ironic that we're so divided as a country. We can't even agree on how to pronounce the word divisive. Or divisive, depending on how you pronounce it. That's the joke, guys. It's a literary, it's an English joke. It's a pronunciation joke. The what's really ironic, what's so funny, is I posted that on Facebook and someone replied, "We also largely don't know the difference between there and they are," like the contraction there with the apostrophe there in the possessive and they are, which is true, we don't, but that's not very funny and not what this joke is about. The Hatua girl is reportedly going to be doing comedy now, and people are already saying she won't be funny, but I don't know. I bet all her jokes are a spit take. Get it? Because she's, you know, the spit? Yeah, you get it. All right. I didn't say these were gold, guys. Like I said, I'm not taking these as a comedy club. They're just one-liners. And I'll probably, some of them I'm going to massage into something one day. I just hit a 912-day streak on Duolingo for Spanish, and they automatically made me an admin for the Blood In, Blood Out fan page. All right. Sure, you have a college degree and the adoration of your parents, but I've had the same cell number for 20 years, so what now? I do feel like that's like a real thing, you know? Who... like when they talk about red flags in relationships, how many times you've had to change your cell phone number? It should, if you're changing your cell phone number, more often, or like more often than we change presidents, there's a problem. You have a very large problem. It's probably because you just find some sugar daddy or sugar mama, get on their plan, and then break up with them. So. Let's see. Project 2025 says everyone gets a free Frosty on Fridays from Wendy's, but only vanilla flavor, no chocolate. That's a conspiracy I can get behind. People are talking the craziest shit about 2025. Here's what I love about this Project 2025 thing. Is there people that haven't even read the user agreement that they sign when they go, like, donate blood out of their body? And they want me to think that they read a 900-page document about what the GOP is trying to do in the next couple years? You're out of your fucking mind. You haven't read shit. The only thing you've read is a headline in the last decade. You know, attention having span, bitch. If you hear a noise, it's just my cat destroying my blinds in my studio. She's kind of a crazy cat. If you wear a bad outfit, but it wasn't premeditated, it's just a crime of fashion. All right? Like crime of passion? You get it? It's, jokes are best when you have to explain them, I found. This isn't a joke. This is just something I love to do. But one of my favorite things in life is trolling the Naples, Florida community group on Facebook. And every time someone posts with some sort of problem that they're having, I just respond to asking if they've ever tried pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. It's so satisfying. I'm not sure there's a more satisfying thing than scratching like a mosquito itch to the point that it bleeds, then it stops itching. Beautiful. This, more satisfying than that. Because those people, Naples, Florida, might be the most conservative group of people in the entire world. Which, fine, whatever. Have your political beliefs. I don't care. I think all of you on both sides are dumb. But they get so upset about things, and they do not realize their hypocrisy. And the irony is just amazing. When they start getting upset about someone did this to me and this happened and this person said this bad about Trump and it's they should be banned forever. And I'm like, oh, infringing on someone's free speech, I see. Not very conservative of you. So, anyway. It's silly the kids believe in the Tooth Fairy, but you believe in your elected officials, so now who's the dumb one? I kind of like that. That's a good point. That's a good point. And lastly, this is more of a story than a joke, but waving to a random little kid after they wave at you equals adorable. The kid's mom seeing you wave at their child, not knowing that their child waved at you first, equals horrifying. Like you're about to be on a TV show with Chris Hansen. This happened to me the other day. I was in Target, not to brag, but I'm walking through, and there's this little girl, and she turns around, she looks at me, and she waves. And because I'm not a psycho, I wave back. I just give her a little smile and a wave. And right as I wave and smile at her daughter, this little girl, this mom turns around and looks me right in the eyes. And she just sees me waving at her daughter and smiling. Like, hey, little girl, what's your name? Do you like basements and eating out of a dog dish? Like, what the fuck? That's insane. And her mom kind of gives me the stink, and I'm like, whoa, 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 lady, take it easy. Like, first of all, your daughter was hitting on me first, okay? All right, guys, that's the jokes for the week. We're gonna cut it. We're gonna get into our guest in a second. Like I said, though, emphasis on comedy. Interviews are gonna be a little different. Format's gonna be a little different. Just different stuff. We're gonna bring in some different stuff again. So, anyway, guys, I do have a couple announcements that I wanted to kind of announce. What else do you do with an announcement? You don't fucking keep, Jesus Christ, I'm an idiot. You don't keep it in your pocket and save it for after dessert. It's an announcement. I got an announcement. I think I already gave you one of them. One of them was the first thing, that there's going to be more comedy on the show again. The second one, this is a big one, guys. And if you listen to this show, I honestly, truly, earnestly hope that you help out with this. But I am finally, after however many years I've been alive, for years, it doesn't matter. I am fulfilling a lifelong dream, and I have written a comic book. Not only did I write it, it has been drawn, it's been colored, there are letters, there's word balloons, there's sound effects, it's done. Baby, it's done. And it's pretty fucking good. I gotta tell you, it is been well received from the people who've read it. Quick story for people who maybe don't follow me or, you know, don't know everything. This comic book was kind of the impetus of I've always wanted to do this, but a couple years ago, I volunteered to work a comic book company's named Apex Comics, small independent comic book company, but they've got some big names. Fabian Nicienza, Ron Frenz, Kurt Busiak, among others, if you know who those people are, if you know comic books at all. The Fabian Nicienza famously co-created Deadpool. You heard of him? Kind of a big deal. Anyway, so I helped work their booth a couple years ago at the LA Comic Con, volunteered to do this, and through just kind of happened. And I was going to be down in LA at that time anyway, touring. So I was like, oh, great, I'll get a free pass to the show, I'll work the show, I'll get to go to the con a little bit, I'll do my shows at night, it'll be great. So I did that. It was super fun. And I was actually in the midst of writing this comic book at the time. And then I just wanted to get like any just get the stink of these professional comic book producers, like writers, artists on me. I wasn't going to like try and pitch in my comic. I didn't want it to be dirty that way. I just wanted it to be like, hey, I'm here to help you. That's it. And maybe I can like glean a little bit of information from you guys. I'm not going to grill you, but like if you say something that, you know, maybe I can pick up on, whatever, whatever, whatever. So I do the weekend. It's great. You know, I work the booth. It's fun. And then at the end, you know, I just leave. And I didn't really, really talk to them. No one knows I want to do a comic book. They just know I do comedy and that's it. And then about a week or two later, one of the main guys, Mario Nisienda, Fabian's brother, calls me and he's like, hey, I just want to thank you for doing the convention. And appreciate you doing it and all that. And he goes, I just wanted to talk to you. I didn't get a chance to talk to you. Maybe get to know you a little better. He goes, so you do comedy. How long have you been doing that for? And, you know, I'm like, oh, a long time, you know, 10, 15 years, whatever. And he's like, oh, great. He goes, you write all your own material? And I said, yeah, of course. Write all my own material, you know, do all that. And he goes, oh, interesting. He goes, you ever think about writing anything else? And I go, well, to be frank with you, I am writing a comic book as we speak. I'm working on, it's a 12-issue series. I just finished, you know, I think at the time I just finished number one. And I was working on the second issue. And he goes, oh, he goes, cool. He goes, send it over. He goes, let's take a look out. He goes, I'll give you some notes. I'll give you some notes. I'm like, great. If I can get some notes from a professional comic book writer and editor, that anything can help, right? So he reads, you know, I send it to him. And, a week goes by and he emails back. He goes, hey, I'm going to send this up to our publisher. I want the president, publisher of Apex Comics to read this. And I go, oh, sure. I'm like, great. And I go, more eye. And in my head, I'm thinking, great, more eyes on this, more information, more, you know, feedback I can get from these professionals. And then I get an email and he goes, hey, we want to hop on a call with you. We want to do like a conference call, the three of us, publisher, you know, president, publisher, head editor, main editor, and me. And I'm like, okay, cool. Still no clue what's happened. He goes, they go and tell me, like, we like this. This is really good. Like, and they said they wanted to do it. Like, I mean, I had a deal to publish this thing with Apex Comics. They wanted to make this happen. And then as things progressed, there was a couple things they wanted to tweak, small tweaks, and just some other things that really weren't exactly how I envisioned it all going. And I didn't want to compromise my artistic integrity. Just kidding. I have zero integrity. I will sell out in a heartbeat. But it wasn't going to come out. It wasn't going to happen just like kind of like I wanted it to. So I kind of moved on from this offer, which is crazy. Considering that I wanted to write comic books my entire life and then someone was giving me an opportunity to do that. But it just wasn't going to happen like I wanted it to. So anyway, some time went on. I moved across the country from Washington to Texas, bought a house, remodeled a house, set up a little farm, homestead, established myself in a new comedy community. And took some time. Anyway, I finally decided at the beginning of this year, paid an artist, paid a letter, paid an inker, and this thing is first issue is completely done. So long story short, what's happening, guys, is we are going to be launching a Kickstarter soon to get this bad boy going. So I implore you, please help out, kick in, get a copy. It means a lot, especially in the first couple days of the Kickstarter. It is so imperative to get fulfilled quickly and to be able to move that needle so you can, keep the product going. And this is a really good story. I really believe in it. I think people are going to love it. It's not a superhero story, so don't expect like Tights and Villain of the Week. It's more of a urban noir crime. Crime. So that was, goddamn Facebook. Crime noir story. It's my fault. I changed to turn off Facebook while I'm doing this. Turn off fucking announcements. It's an urban crime noir. It's very good. It's dark. It's gritty. The art is fantastic. So again, just if when this Kickstarter launches, I really you're going to get a chance to follow it before it goes live. Please follow. Then once it goes live, please donate and let's get this bad boy going. You will not regret it. So anyway, that's it, guys. We're going to talk about that more ad nauseum as we get closer and as things progress. But for now, let's get into it with our guest. Please welcome private investigator, author, James Lynch. James, how you doing? Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here today. We appreciate you hanging out. Again, as I said, author, private investigator, and much, much more. We're going to find out all about you. I don't know much about you yet, besides what you sent me in the email, because I don't do a lot of work for this show. So what I do is I just jump into it, get into my guests and start talking and figure it out. The thing that really picked my interest is private investigator. That's got, I need to know how you got into this profession, yeah. James.
Well, after college, I worked for the Casino Control Commission in Atlantic City. And okay. It was my job to make up the maintain the blacklist of people who were weren't allowed in the casinos, and that involved a lot of research. And I got into that, and then they let me go, and I got a job up in New York doing the same stuff. And I did my 10,000 hours and started my own company. I don't do the TVPI stuff like following people around or anything because the hours are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's just, and a lot of times you don't get paid, so I like doing what I can do from the sitting at my computer, and then I got a good following. I did all right, and then over the years, I mean, I did some crazy shit, and I was like, this has to be put down. So I started plopping down stories here and there, and then I just put them in the narrative of the book and whittled a story around it. That's got decent reviews.
Yeah, this is the most disappointing thing from like movies to reality for people is that I've talked to different PIs over my lifetime, and all of them are like, yeah, you just make some phone calls, you do a little Googling, yeah. And it's like,
well, it can be sometimes, but yeah. Sometimes you gotta get out there, and it's it's very distasteful, You get a call at 11:45 on New Year's Eve, and that's what you got to do, and it wasn't fun. So,
I mean, how I feel like it's also private investigator. It's like a thin line between like stalker and professional. It could go
exactly.
Like someone like I feel like anyone who is like a really good at stalking people could be like, oh, yeah, I could parlay this into a professional.
Well, that's another aspect. Sometimes you just feel filthy. It's yeah. Just like, what did I do? And that's divorce cases. That's what I refuse to do those. I know the money can be very good in that, but I just refuse to.
You probably some of this.
Dig into that stuff.
I assume
it's just distasteful.
I can imagine it gets pretty wild. I assume some of the crazier stuff made it into the book you wrote, which we'll talk about. Yeah. Because obviously the more salacious, the better it is in print. Mm-hmm. But tell us in your words, what's the craziest case you ever took or thing that happened in a case you took?
I did several divorce cases, mostly one woman was getting scammed by a
Nigerian prince. I've been there too.
What do they call it, catfished or something, and she lost I'm in love, he's working on an oil rig, and I just sent him $50,000, and it's just heartbreaking.
Wait, is that guy not real?
And they refuse to believe that they're, that that they're being hoodwinked.
Yeah.
Other cases, we did one case where we knew it was the mafia related, and we had to just go and interview, like ask some specific questions, different stores. And it was, you know, people like, this was in Staten Island. They were asking me, you know, and two guys came out of the back room. And luckily I brought my assistant with me because I didn't have to outrun the guys. I just had to outrun my assistant. And we just, these guys were just coming at us and we just got the hell out. I was like, we would have been pummeled.
Yeah.
Now, I told the client as much. I'm like, no, this is, you know, this isn't worth the money.
No. Tell me the truth. Women cheat more or men cheat more, do you find in these divorces? What are you finding in your private investigations?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would say I'm leaning towards more men cheating.
All right, I'm going to edit this so you said women to make.
Okay, all right, we can do that. Women.
No, so the so men cheat more, but by a small margin. You're saying it's negligible.
Yeah. Well, this was, I mean, when I was doing that stuff. This was before Facebook. This was before, you know, everybody's walking around with a phone. I'm like, now it'd just be. It's almost impossible to carry out an affair right now with going on because it's
well, I'm up for a challenge. So
yeah. And it's, you know, it's yeah, I told my wife I'm way too lazy to carry on an affair, and she's satisfied with that.
That's the reality of it. I mean, that's the sad reality. I mean, that's not as romantic as, no, honey, I just love you. But it's like, I don't have the time.
I can't. You carry on an affair, you know, the next, it's sometimes of your time covering your tracks, and you know that's just not worth it.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I also love my wife, so I'm not going to do that.
But. Right now, I have to buy two birthdays. Now I have to remember two birthdays. Are you out of your mind? I can barely remember one. It's such a different landscape with the internet and all the sleuthing, and you know, like you can find out so much about anyone so easily online because people are so quick to put their entire life. Like I mean, as a comedian, I've pissed a lot of people off, and I have the downfall of I also literally put my schedule online, advertise where and when I'm going to be places for shows. I'm like, if someone wants to kill me, they're going to find me. I'm going to be, you know, I have to go to Tulsa next weekend for three shows. So they're going to, you know, I can't hide. But
it's a whole adultery thing is, you know, and the another thing with that is if you do it for long enough time, you're gonna get sloppy too.
Yeah,
you're gonna do something, and it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
That's what I, you know. Not that I, you know, it's just not. You know, we've done divorce cases, personal injury. Those were fun. You know, the guy says he could barely walk, and then you catch him playing softball with his beer league buddies. You know, that's always fun.
Yeah.
You know, people just can't help themselves. You know, if you're sitting on a lawsuit, you know, don't leave your house. You know,
yeah.
No matter how much you want to, it's like wait till the check clears, and then you can go out. And
then play.
But. Just do your thing, you know?
Yeah, wait till the check clears till you start doing slow pitching.
But people are also creatures of habit, and they always fall back into their old habits, you know? Yeah. It's like they have to do that, and you know, that's how they get caught.
So I say don't have habits. If you don't do anything, you can't ever get caught doing anything. That's
exactly.
What I'm saying.
Just your habit's home. Sitting on the couch watching TV, then, you know, you'll be good to go.
You ever make friends with a guy, with someone in a case where you, like someone who was supposed to be the person you were looking out, like checking in on, and then you realize maybe they were in the right?
Yeah.
Maybe not friends, but you're like, maybe this person isn't, they're the good guy in this scenario, actually.
Yeah. I did some cases with these guys. They were predators. I didn't realize that they were predators on you know, like check like unclaimed assets. Mm. And the guys who I were, ended up working for were like, these guys were the crooks. And I was like abetting them. So I, you know, it's in the book, you know, where I, you know, reached out to them, like, hey, listen, they're going to take like this much money off the top. And, you know, you're going to get screwed. You know, yeah. They're just here to take your money. It's like, the money here, you can get it yourself, you know? And the guy, you know, that was very sad. I didn't get a nickel out of it, but I felt a lot better, you know? And sometimes, you know, like, I do cases where I'm like, yeah, you know, this, I feel for this guy, but, you know, he's doing what he's doing, you know?
Yeah. Well,
you know. Like, maybe just be, he might be justified, but, you know, did what he did, you know?
Yeah. What was
I could do about that, but, you know, they cut him some slack.
What was the turning point to get you out of it? Well, you know, it sounds like you kind of moved away from the gumshoe work. What was it? Well,
I got married and I went on my wife's insurance so I could start my own company so I could do what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
That was the biggest catalyst. And as soon as that happened, I was working for these two retired detectives. They were great guys. But, you know, it's just everything was on me. And I was just, it was just, we did a lot of executive protection and for these millionaires and billionaires and people who weren't told no. And it just got excruciating after a while. It was just, you know, I couldn't be available 24/7.
It was brutal. So you got your wife's insurance and what was you wanted to do?
Well, do with the work that I like doing, the stuff where I can just sit at a desk. Do background.
Is that where you're like a consultant?
Track people down and, you know, do forensic searches. I mean, yep, and I run. I'm sorry, what?
You start becoming like, you're like a consultant kind of. They have like different terms for them now that they use. It's less, seems like a new PC term for, you know.
Yeah. I check out people, you know, like if you're going into business with somebody, you want to know where their money came from, you're hiring somebody, you know, you're, you know, somebody's applying for a membership in your club or something, you just want to know who they are.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And I do, and occasionally I'll get the call to be like, can you go check out this property? Can you go interview these people? I have no problem with that, you know, as long as somebody's there. But, you know, most of 90% of my stuff, I just, you know, but, you know, if I get a call, I'm like, that sounds interesting, let me do this. But, you know, it's mostly what I, you know, just forensic searches going on. I have access to a lot of databases that the general public doesn't have access to.
How do I get access to those? What do you need to do? What do you need to do to get? Do I got to buy a membership? Do I get to get it? Do I get to get?
Well, you got to get a door license, and a PI trench license. Coat? I don't know what you have to do. I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the requirements are in Texas. It's a state-to-state thing.
Yeah.
In Jersey, you know, you have to do like 2,000 hours.
Oh.
And, you know, driver's license, stuff like that. But, you know, I have people call me up and like, oh, can you run a license plate for me? I'm like, hell no. Why? Because I'm like, well, because people have been getting murdered, you know, and they enacted a law.
Yeah, I think in Texas they're.
But I'm glad it's, you know, they enacted that law because, you know, I think the girl's cute. Let me get her, you know.
Oh yeah, track her down.
I want to know where she lives. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that.
I think they're pretty fast. They're pretty fast and loose in Texas with regulations. It's like, can you ride a horse and shoot a gun? You can do whatever you want. Let's go.
Yeah. That's what I'm. I would assume that it's just more of an inconvenience than a, you know. Hmm. But who knows? But I have, you know, I get my hands on some information that sometimes I'm just like, I'm not going to give you this because I don't know what you're going to do with it, you know?
Yeah,
I just want to know where they live.
You ever take a case and then start getting into the details and think, this is above my pay grade? What I mean, like something that's like, seems too risky. Seems like you could really get into
this is the job for law enforcement. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to ferret this over to the FBI.
Wow. That's a wild one. Where
I wash my hands of it because, I'm in way over my head. And I freely admit that, too. I'm never going to, you know, money laundering organizations and stuff. I'm like, this is out of my league. You know, these are the people who carry guns. And, you know, I don't carry a gun. I don't want a gun, and I don't want it because if you're carrying a gun, it means you're doing something that people want to shoot at you.
Yeah,
I'm not that into the job.
Many years ago, I worked at a furniture store selling furniture, and this lady came in and bought a ton of furniture, like thousands of dollars worth of stuff, and she was kind of a bitch, right? She's just terrible, just a pain in the ass. But she bought a bunch of stuff. And then a couple months later, I got a call from a detective. And they're like, hey, we're actually calling. We're trying to get some information on a customer. Like, this is Detective so-and-so. Like, we're trying to find some information. And I go, oh, and I pull up the invoice. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this lady. I sold her this stuff. And the only reason I remembered her was because she was such a twat. You know, if she was just some generic lady, I never would have remembered her. But they're like, do you remember how she paid? And I remembered, because again, she was such a bitch that it's stuck in my head. I go, she paid all cash. And like, oh, okay, thank you. Well, it turns out she worked at a casino and been embezzling money through the casino. So it just goes to show you, folks, if you're going to be a lying, cheating, stealing cunt, at least be nice to people, because then, you know, just slide under the radar.
Yeah.
So
I will gladly drop dime on that. Yeah. Well, it's just the same thing with the casinos. Or, you know, I was a bartender for years, and it's like, I'm sure it starts out with like, I'll just take 10, 20 bucks here, you know, to cover my gas costs. And then it's like, they didn't notice that. They're not going to notice 100 bucks.
Yeah.
And that's how it works. It's always, and next thing you know, you know, I've seen it in the casinos. I've seen it in bars, any place where you're dealing with any kind of cash.
Yeah, you need that bigger rush.
Yes, it's just human nature, you know.
Yeah, in a casino, I couldn't imagine. It's like, man, they've got so many cameras and so many, you know, that's generally run by an unsavory element anyway.
Like, yeah. That is like when I was with the casino control. It was like we were basically the referees. We made sure the people weren't screwing the casinos and the casinos weren't screwing the people, you know?
Yeah.
Made sure all the, you know, the card file, the dice were calibrated, and just made sure the, you know, these, you know, you get somebody coming in, drills a hole in a silver dollar and just, you know, keeps on using it in the slot machines, you know? It's like, okay, camera 32, you know? Okay, yeah. Let's get them, you know?
I can imagine. What's the craziest thing you ran into in the casinos, doing the casino stuff? Biggest scam somebody tried to run?
Man, we used to do the casino, like the slot machine dumps, and we just led these 80, 100-pound buckets of quarters. This is before everything was, you know. And one of the trans, they left a bag of the, they left one of the buckets of quarters, and the janitor found it, put it in his mop bucket, and walked into the bathroom. And it's like, he was just hoping that nobody would notice. And then like 2 minutes later, it's just like, oh, we're missing one. Okay, he's in the bathroom right now. But I was like, you know, it wasn't a scam, but it was, we worked at one of Trump's casinos, and he was found that he was pumping in like pure oxygen at like 2 o'clock in the morning to keep people awake.
Oh yeah, they're doing that at all the casinos, aren't they?
Like, oh man, you're pumping in pure oxygen between like 2 and 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, it was just a little stuff. I wasn't there for long enough to get any real scandal, but you know, we just did what we did. You know, it was made sure it was an even playing field, and you know, that was about it.
Yeah, where'd you grow up, James?
I grew up outside of Philadelphia, South Jersey, town called Lakes. It was between Philadelphia and the Jersey Shore. It was nice. And we moved up to Essex County near New York when I was in high school. Then I went back down to college in South Jersey again, back up to North Jersey. Lived in Brooklyn for a while.
Yeah.
Mostly, you know, in the tri-state area.
So always an East Coast guy.
I'm sorry, what?
Always an
East Coaster. The East Coaster, yeah. So, I got a brother out in California.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, it's mainly, yeah. Yeah. I'm a Jersey guy through and through.
Are East Coast people is as angry as they are portrayed on TV?
They can be. It depends. Yes, it's definitely not a stereo. It's not a wrong stereotype, yeah. But for the most part, yeah. You know, it's like,
what are they so mad about?
I don't know. It's not mad. It's just a general
agitation.
What do you want from me? Or, you know, why, you know, a little bit, it can be, but it, yeah, it's no. Okay. Why is this complete stranger talking to me? What do they want from me? You know? Yeah. And you know, you usually fish it out, and most of the times they're right, but you know, it's just not the hyper aggressive, like Jersey Shore thing, you know?
Yeah.
But it can be, it depends on where you go to on Jersey Shore.
You know, part of what it is, I've always said, like, you know, those people are like the descendants of people that hopped on a boat and decided to take a chance on going months across an ocean when they thought the world was flat and hoping that they'd hit another land. Like those are some strong willed people, you know? So I think there's just a general like, hey, I'm doing stuff here. I got stuff. What do you do? You know?
Yeah. I mean, it was a couple miles away from, you know, land, and it's definitely the, you know.
Oh, you're breaking up pretty bad, James.
Bloomfield Nutley area of Essex County, New Jersey is definitely, you know. Oh, I'll just say that I went to high school around Sopranos land. You know, This the culture up there was portrayed absolutely correctly.
Is it? Yes, very, very spot on, huh?
Okay. Oh, yeah. The guy knew what he was talking about.
All right. So tell us about the book. You wrote a book. It was your COVID project. Yeah, it's loosely
my
based
COVID
on...
project. I was popping down stories about what I did, and then I'm shopping around and somebody's like, you got something here. So, and I came up with a narrative. The name of the book is For Duty and Humanity, because it's the old Three Stooges trope, you know, where you're trying to do the right thing, but just end up gumming up the works. And, you know, you have the best of intentions, but, you know, you're not very bright. And sometimes, you just gum everything up. And that's the nature of the book. It's my nature, too, a lot of times. It's well-meaning, but misplaced. And,
Well, I wouldn't put that on your business cards, but I get what you're saying.
You know, it's 90% of the book, contents of the book. No. I came up with a narrative. I wrapped around the narrative around most of the stories, and you know, people are enjoying it. And it was a lot of fun to do. It takes a lot out of you, but it was something to do.
Yeah, I got to read a little bit of it. I appreciate the link. I'm definitely going to finish it. So is there plans for a follow up, or you want to do more?
Working on it. I'm starting to. Yeah, we need another pandemic, and then I'll really get going on this.
Well, I don't know if we need that. Now, you know, come and slump up. I don't know.
Well, you're right. All right, maybe I'll rephrase that.
You need some downtime. I don't know if we need, I don't know.
Another global pandemic. Maybe we should just do it.
I don't know if I can hang out in another totalitarian hellhole for 4 years. At least you took advantage of it and didn't just, develop a crippling drug and alcohol addiction like most Americans during the pandemic. So,
I did that. Well, I tried that for a little while. Yeah. You know.
Drugs and alcohol
I'm just going to leave it at that.
Just you can still get hired. Okay. I'm not going to fault you. I've been around the world and done a lot of things. Did you always want to write a book, or what was it when you thought like, oh, this needs to be on paper? Because, you know, I mean, everyone, especially like in a job like you have, you know, people are always like, oh, that's a crazy story. You should, be a book.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing about the PI industry is like the pay is awful. The hours are ridiculous, but you get some great stories. That's the nature. That's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
But I would not recommend it on any.
The PI, not the book. You'd recommend the book.
That's for sure. So it's not a... unless you're working for the PI. Oh no, the PI. If you're working for a big company like Kroll or something, that's great. But if you're on your own, you're it's not easy.
Yeah.
But it can be great because you're working for yourself, and you know it's you don't have anybody to answer to.
Sure.
But also sometimes my boss is an idiot, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Whoever's hiring you that day is a moron.
All right.
Yeah, believe me, I do comedy. I get it. How much truth can, like, if you were to write, I mean, obviously you fictionalized a lot of stuff for the book, I assume, but how much of what you do in your work are you allowed to talk about later and use, or how much are you legally have to,
It depends. I mean, some of this stuff I did, it was so long ago that, you just change some names and, but there's certain things that I really can't ever, even bring up in conversation because, it's just some, they involve child custody and, it's just not a pretty, so I won't do that. And there's, there's a reason for that. And I just, sometimes I might blurt it out at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'll change names and I did some crazy shit, and I have to get it out there. But before I got into the PI, where I took a year or two off, I did some travel writing, I did some world, I did a bounce around the planet for a little while and did some travel writing. That was very rewarding. And, I hunkered down and got back into this line of work.
So if they asked you to investigate the guy who tried to shoot Trump, would you take the case? And how long do you think it would take you to find out that it was the CIA?
Oh boy! the moment I would see a laser pointer at my directly on my heart, but. Yeah, I mean, first thing you do is something like that, you check social media, to see what this person's, and then it's something like that. Yeah, I wouldn't touch it with a no thank you.
Yeah.
Because the only thing going through your head is I'm being set up, you know?
Yeah, then you're like.
That's the only thing I'm like, hell no,
Yeah, you're getting deeper into the game. Your fingerprints are getting on it.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, you just want another set of prints here, And then could set me up as a fall guy.
Crazy.
I'm still having fun at it. But when if the check clears, I'm not willing to be bit of a fall guy.
Yeah, just
got to keep the lights on somehow.
Take that check and do more of that travel writing. Hit the road. Write about a country that doesn't extradite. There you go. Where's Julian Assange? Let's go there. out of all the travel writing you did, when you traveled, what was your favorite place you traveled to?
I love Ireland. I've been there about at least 8 times. That's not my heritage, but Italy's great. Most of Europe, I love Thailand. I went up to Nepal. I did the Himalayas. Bangladesh, I do not recommend. But it was what it was. It's always like the worst part of your trip is the only part you really end up talking about sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
It's like I was stuck in Bangladesh for 5 days and it was just brutal. But that's what I ended up writing most about, So where are you at the end of the?
That's true. You get the content out of it.
Day, it's like at least I'm glad I got to experience it,
Yeah.
Would I go back? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Believe me, my best comedy content is not about the good times in life. It's about the worst experience I've ever had.
Yeah, that really sucked. I'm going to talk about this for a while.
I need to know about Ireland because my mother's last dream in life is to go visit Ireland, and because I ruined most of her life being a terrible child, I feel at some point I'm gonna pay her back by buying her a trip to Ireland. Where should she go and what should she do? She's a feeble old lady that enjoys conservative news and knitting. What should she do in Ireland?
It's got a great rail system. In Dublin, you can start off in Dublin, take a train down to Galway, and Galway is one of the, it's one of these places. It's like I get it. You know, it's just magnificent. You know, the islands. My family hails from Kilkenny, which is like on the other side. There's a huge castle. It's just beautiful. You hop on a train and you just see the countryside. And it's just so, it's everything you thought it would be, you know, and it's, you know, grab a pint, you walk into a pub and there's a, you know, little fire going, there's a dog sleeping and some guys walk in with violins and just start playing. And it's just like, this is out of a movie. And it's just absolutely spectacular.
If you had to
pick. I'm biased, but you know, because I got family over there. But it's all good.
If you had to choose a side, North or South Ireland?
South. Well, I mean, that's where we go in the South of Ireland.
Yeah, I meant politically in the revolution. Which side are you throwing a firebomb on? Oh, so still the South, probably. If you got the
I've never been up to Belfast or anything like that, but that's, you know, on the list.
All right. So let's talk about the book more writing again. You want to go you look at a second book. Are you thinking about something that's a continuation of what you already wrote or something all new?
Well, it's a continuation. It's just set like post-COVID. Everybody's getting their legs under them again, and it involves something. It would a failed business venture that I tried years ago that went nowhere, but in the book, anything can happen. So
yeah, there you go. The book, you became a millionaire.
If I rewrite it, you know, reimagine it, it's still basically the plot line is, you know, usually me doing something, you know, profoundly, you know, not stupid, but not called for. Stick my nose where it doesn't belong, and you know.
All right. Yeah, that's how the trouble begins.
Hijinks ensue.
Yeah, yeah. So is the same people who published your first book interested in the second one potentially? Is there like a first look thing, or how's that work for you?
Yeah, it depends on, you know, they come sniffing around once your sales bump, you know, and they ask you if you're going to do it, and then if things stop selling, then they just start, you know, they leave you alone. But if, you know, anything that moves the needle, they reach out to you. They're like, oh yeah, yeah, you're doing well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but if things stop, then it's, you know,
dries up fast. How's the first book? How did it sell? I mean, you know, were there physical copies, digital, and was it? I mean,
both physical and digital. It sold well when it came out, but when you realize there's just every month there's an avalanche of new books that come out.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of self-published, so you just gotta keep on it. You know, do the book fairs, do everything, you know, and. You know, and sometimes I just have to put it aside. Be like, I just got to be me for a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the book's an extension of who I am, so I gotta keep on plugging away. And you know, I've done a lot of podcasts, and I enjoy the format. I love the podcast format. It's just the free form stuff. And every time, you know, it moves the needle, you know, and people start asking around, and you know, who knows? You know, it's just out there. So. And it, you know, these other book clubs, you know, a friend of mine's like, you should join these authors clubs and stuff. But it's just, it's a bunch of people just patting each other's on the back and sniffing their own farts for an hour, yeah. You know, because saying how great we are because I'm like, I don't need this,
yeah,
you know?
That's, yeah, like, we don't need that. I'll, you know.
Like, and it's people who just, you know, like, all right, no. And I just find that bothersome, and just like disassociate myself with that. But you know, I like being referred to as an author, but I don't need to be constantly, you know.
Yeah. So tell people where they can find the book if they want to find it.
Well, there's a you get it on Amazon. Amazon, I would recommend you do it on Kindle because the Amazon is still trotting out an older edit of the book. Barnes & Noble has the updated edit. Walmart has the updated edit. But Amazon's the king. So
okay.
I don't know if it's filtered through yet. Because it's me and the publisher got into a bit of a kerfuffle. It was like they shipped out the wrong one. And but the other outlets had, they have the updated version. And,
okay.
You know, that's the version that I'm satisfied with.
So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, go from there. Any social media people should follow you on?
I'm a Facebook guy, but I'm only on Facebook because I have to check, see what other people are doing on Facebook for my clients. I'm not very active on that. I got a Twitter account, you know, but I'm not, you know, Twitter, yeah, Facebook, you know, James Lynch, Facebook, you know, James Lynch, Jersey City, you know, every once in a while, you know, I stay away from, you know, posting on it about politics, but, you know, just general stuff, you know, that you can find out more about my book on that. And there's some media outlets put, like Fox put out a nice review of my book.
Okay.
If you just Google for Duty and Humanity, James Lynch, a lot of stuff will come up.
All right. Well, James, we're going to, before we get out of here, we're going to do a little segment that we call the Rundown. This is just a series of questions we ask all our first time guests. There's no real rhyme or reason to them. They're just pretty random questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First one. You're a detective. You're PI. What do you think? Bigfoot, real or fake?
I would love to see him be real, but I don't think it is.
Not real.
I would love nothing better to have Bigfoot be real, but I don't think so.
Never existed. Not was a thing ever. You think it just?
At one point, you know, there was the, you know, the giant monkeys in Indonesia they found, but you know, I got to go no on that one.
No longer around. Okay. Yeah. If
they found out he was real, I'd be absolutely delighted.
Yeah. If the world descended into a zombie apocalypse, which I think we're on the verge of, how long do you think you would survive?
If the world descended into what?
A zombie apocalypse.
Oh, zombie apocalypse. Oh, I'd be a goner. I live in a city. I don't think I always see, well, you know, I talk to my wife about zombie proofing our house, but there's so many people. If I got out of town quick enough, I might stand a chance. But if I was in the middle of a city, I'd be.
You think you got the skills once you're out there? Even if you got in the middle of nowhere, you know how to shoot, you know how to hunt, anything like that, or you would.
I don't know, because I work through stores, and I'm like, that would be a great weapon for a zombie apocalypse. But I don't know if I could pull it off. Plus, also, I don't know if I'd be the guy who would hide the zombie bite or not. I can't say for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a tough one. You just, in the middle of dinner, you just turn and be like, oh, sorry, forgot to tell you, yesterday was rough for me. Tonight's going to suck for all of you.
Exactly.
But the good news is we get to stay together as a family, undead forever. All right. So
you're going first.
Yeah, you'd survive for a little while. Okay. All right.
I think so.
If East Coast is known for their pizza, especially New York, you know, they're all about their pizza out there.
Yeah.
So I gotta ask you, if you could have one pizza for the rest of your life, not from a place, but
just type
toppings.
Of pizza.
Yeah. Now that's the only pizza you can ever have for the rest of your life. What's your go-to?
Just pepperoni. Pepperoni, maybe mushrooms, but pepperoni is that's my go-to.
Now, are you a pepperoni under the cheese or on top of the cheese guy?
On top.
All right. I like it. That's where you got to get it crispy, right?
Yeah.
All right. If someone were to make a movie about your life, who would play you in the movie?
Ooh. What was it? I was watching I think Jason Lee would be good. The guy from My Name is Earl.
Yeah.
Almost Famous.
Okay. Yeah. Mall Rats and stuff. Yeah, okay.
I think that would be, he would be the perfect. Or maybe John Cusack. Who knows?
John Cusack.
I'd let them fight it out.
There you go. That's I like that in this scenario, they're fighting for the role of playing James Lynch. You really bumped up your clout in this,
exactly,
in this hypothetical.
Exactly.
I like where your head's at, James. The, If you could go to any point in history to view a particular time, where would you go and why?
I think the signing of the Declaration of Independence, Philly. I think that would be a very important, something to be a fly on the wall for.
Yeah. To see if they just winked at each other when they said all men created equal, and they just kind of like, yeah, you know yeah, what yeah, I mean. Yeah.
Right,
you
we'll know. Just kick them down the road. You know?
All right.
Just to remind them, you're only going to separate the church. You really got to make this more more clear. Because can you? In a couple of years, they're going to be saying.
Add a couple of some extra verbiage. All right, very good. All right, James. Well, again, tell everyone, remind everyone one more time, website or where they can find the book in the name of it.
The book is For Duty and Humanity. It's by my book, James Lynch, media outlet, Kindle, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart. Just Google it and, you know, it's readily available on all the platforms.
All right. Well, James, we appreciate you being here today, and keep an eye out for a second book. If you get the second book out, please let us know. We'd be happy to promote it again.
I absolutely will.
And as for me, guys, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Dates coming up. If you're listening to this as it comes out, I'll be at Tanks tomorrow night in San Antonio. Come check that out. I'm working some new material before I hit the road in August. Going to be on tour all through August, September. Check the website for dates. And that's it, guys. We appreciate you hanging out. For the Social Hour, I have been Deese, and for James Lynch, thank you very much.
And, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And we will see you guys next week.